Hello everybody and welcome back inside the Shark Tank. It was job done up at Kingston Park on Sunday afternoon as Sale ran riot. 35 points to 14 winners over Newcastle. Five very important match points that were much needed as we continue to scrape our way back into that top four playoff race. My name is Lewis and joining me to discuss are my co-hosts. We've got a full house today, a bit like Kingston Park on Sunday. Alex and James joining me. Gents, how good to have the three of us all together for a change. I'll start with you, Alex, as I always do. How are things on your side?
Yeah, lovely to see both of your faces at once for the first time in a while. No, it's really good. Good to come off the back of a couple of good wins as well, a bit of a running form. You know, it feels like we're getting there as a club and as a podcast and getting some of that good feeling back. So, yeah, two games left of the season, a bit more positivity around the club, hopefully, and excited to chat about it and break it all down. But yeah, just happy to have all three of us back as well.
You're definitely right about things being back on track for the podcast, and it's no surprise, two wins on the bounce and all three of us are available to chat. It makes things a lot easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, so good. I mean, it's a bit like the Premiership season with the three of us getting together, isn't it? It's like sporadic, I'd say. but no, great to be back together. And, you know, some of the other results, well, all of the other results didn't go our way, sadly. But we got our job done and therefore, you know, still in the mix.
So just to set the scene here, Alex, you were up at Kingston Park on Sunday enjoying, as you said to us off air, two pints of Guinness. Watching the game back, I know you weren't on the podcast last week, but me and James talked at length. You know, we should be winning by five tries. We should be winning by 40 points, 50 points. Obviously, never really sort of came to that. But I think the prevailing feeling around the Sale fan base at the moment is that was enough, right? Get your 5 points. It's a tricky place to go. Newcastle were bouncing back after that absolute tonking from Bristol. It was always going to be a trickier game. But realistically, coming away with anything less than 5 points wouldn't be acceptable. That's obviously not come to pass. We've come away with the 5 points. It feels like job done. Is that a fair reflection on how it felt on the day?
Yeah, I think so. Never nice to beat Falcons, as I said at the ground. You know, if we could have both of us as top two, then that would be ideal, really. Obviously, with Sale always ultimately coming out on top. But it felt like Falcons put a lot of endeavour in, but you can tell that they've had a season that has been a struggle. And, you know, the first 20 minutes was just mostly them attacking. Everyone's heads were looking one way, which was the way Falcons were attacking. We were in our 22. And they just couldn't get through, get over the line. And you could feel the frustration around the ground of that, which completely get. And, you know, it was just... Sale's defence was good. It wasn't amazing. You know, there were a couple of... there's a Tom Roebuck intercept on our own line, which just massively takes the pressure off. A couple of knock-ons and things like that. So, yeah, really good shift from Sale to defend that. But you could feel the Falcons kind of... I think they needed to score a few points there to give the game a different dimension and take it in a different direction. Obviously, then Sale go and score a couple, and actually it became clear quite early on that Sale had the wind in that first half. So at half time, I think it still felt like there was maybe a few more twists in the tail, but we did really well to kind of keep my arm's length, pull away. And as you say, 5 points was what we needed. It's what we got. We've got take no pleasure in leaving Falcons with nothing, but you know, for a team that wants to be where we want to be, top four, we need to be taking 5 points out of this game. And, you know, stats before the game, saw flying around on the supporters group on Facebook and stuff like that. We hadn't won at Falcons since 2016 in the Prem. So, you know, it's been a long shift. We've been overdue one, and we did very well to get it. But, you know, it still wasn't easy. The scoreline looks like it was easy, but really we scored two tries in the last 5-6 minutes that made the game safe. And I think that's one thing that's good to come out of that game. We played a full 80, and, you know, we had Will Griff-John come on at like 20 minutes, maybe earlier, for James Harper. he took a nasty blow to the head and got yellow carded for it. Rightly so, by the way. I'm not disputing that. But just to see us go into that final quarter, I feel like the final quarter of games we've really struggled this season. So to see us go into that final quarter and kind of push on, definitely, hopefully, will encourage us a bit more to be able to do that against, ultimately, this sounds very harsh, but, you know, better teams, teams that are higher up in the league. So, yeah, getting away with 5 points is exactly what we want. And, you know, the performance was good to go with it, I think. So you've got to be happy with that, haven't you?
I think so. James, what was your sort of prevailing thought off the back of this? Because I think to Alex's point, it feels like a game where maybe there was a bit of opportunity for Newcastle in those first 20 minutes. They couldn't convert. And it did feel like you saw those heads start to drop right. And it did feel like a matter of time before Sale were just going to start to edge away.
Yeah, I think we took our chances. I think that, you know, we were a lot more ruthless in our red zone, and our defence is kind of back to where it was. You know, Newcastle were really struggling to make any inroads, and, you know, that does affect the confidence. What I would say for Newcastle is to get back to 14-all early in the second half showed really quite a lot of character which clearly wasn't on show the week before, shipping 80. So there was definitely a response. I think the Falcons fans can take something away from that. There's definitely a response there that maybe with a more confident side, that momentum when they got back to 14-all might have shifted the other way. And actually, we were able to show our kind of mental resolve to really take the game away. And you know, I thought that we were pretty good in the tight. You know, obviously, Cowan Dickey's try, Ben Curry's try. You know, these were pretty, you know, sort of in close quarters. Even the Tom Roebuck try, if I'm honest, it sort of came off the back of a kind of loose exit from a mall. And actually, I thought, you know, actually the hands there was absolutely, I mean, there's obviously a strike call that had already been made, but, you know, clearly it didn't go to plan. But we managed to execute it really, really nicely. And having Tom Roebuck coming off the blind side wing works really, really well. And we only really saw us, like, really, I'd say, sort of fly in that Carpenter try, which was, again, a continuation from our conversation last week, Lewis, about Manu Tuilagi, because he hasn't had, in the last two games, he has broken tackles and broken through the first line defence in ways that we haven't seen in the whole time he's been here. And we thought that those days might be a little bit behind him. Look, he still carries, still has sort of metres in contact, but these are actually breaking tackles and breaking through and creating tries. So it's ironic that we also played him on a 4G pitch as well, which we haven't done since we've had him. So maybe that sort of looking after him is kind of, maybe that's just out the window. Maybe just play him every time that you can. And, you know, that Carpenter try was really nice. So look, I think there's an element of fluency in our game, which we didn't absolutely nail by any means. But we've got it in our locker, which, you know, if we can make the playoffs, then you think, actually, no, we will be a threat this year. I think the way we were playing up to the end of January, you wouldn't have said, even if we scraped into fourth, that we were a threat in the knockouts. Just because on hard pitches, we won't be able to score enough points to win the games. Whereas now I think, actually, no, we are capable of it if we turn up. And, you know, that we execute the basics well, because we obviously most of the time have the physicality too.
I think that's a really good point, actually. And I guess, you know, to kind of roll some of these chats together, we talk so much about when Sale lose, oh, it's the basics, it's the fundamentals, it's pass and catch, et cetera, set piece. These are the things that are letting us down. And I guess, you know, credit where credit's due, we probably saw the inverse of that a little bit on Sunday, where I think it was the Roebuck try where the ball gets ripped out off first phase, off the back of an attacking maul. The ball bounces, but every player from a Sale perspective is heads up. Guswell picks it up, passes to Ford. Ford gets tackled, offload, pass. Roebuck goes over. It's moments like that And again, seeing the Joe Carpenter try come off a first phase strike play, it's not just Tuilagi breaking the tackle, it's having Carpenter on his outside shoulder for the for the very simple 2-on-1 draw and pass. It's seeing the rolling maul function. It's just all these little things that we've maybe been a bit more inconsistent with this year than we have in years past. It did feel like a Sale performance of old, though, just dominant up front, set piece was going. And actually, when we did get the opportunity to throw the ball around, a bit like we saw against Quins, the hands were good, the passing was good. It was going into players' chests. It wasn't going, 5 yards behind them. Decision-making was on point. It felt like a more mature, composed performance that we've just not seen for a long time. And I guess that point about Manu Tuilagi on a 4G pitch, well, he's going to, is it Bayonne at the end of the season? You do wonder at a certain point, there's only so much we can do from a duty of care perspective, right? And maybe some of that hesitancy to play him on a turf like that in years past, well, that's no longer relevant, given that he won't be at the club for long of that. Not in a malicious way, but that's just the way that these things are. And it's allowing us to play probably again with a little bit more freedom. Obviously, Alex, I've mentioned it, but you were there on the day. So you got a better look than any of us at any standout performance from a Sale perspective. So who sort of caught the eye? Because again, very professional, very composed performance. But as there is always in games like this, there's always a player or two that catches the eye.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really good point you made about the accuracy in our play. The lack of drop balls, knock-ons, forward passes. There was more of that from Newcastle, put under pressure by our defence. It didn't feel like we had a massive amount of ball for the whole game, really. But when we did, we were really effective. Literally, first couple of minutes, there's a pass to Joe Carpenter. He breaks the line and we kind of made 40, 50 metres in a two-pass phase. So I thought Carpenter had a very good game from fullback, solid under a very difficult high ball. The wind was really, really odd because you couldn't feel it in the seats, but it was clearly really strong at the top. And Newcastle struggled with that a lot. And we didn't, thanks mostly to, say Joe Carpenter and Tom Roebuck in backfield, which is really impressive. In the forwards, I thought Ben Curry was immense again. We always know he's going to be, but you just have to mention it anyway. Luke Cavendish had a really good game at hooker as well. Brought a lot of energy in defence, really solid in attack and kind of piloting the back of that maul. So that was very impressive. And then George Ford and Rob Dupree are hand in hand again, kind of creating stuff and just making it look so easy. Talked about the Carpenter try. It's the Rob Dupree kind of at 10 as that pivot who puts Manu through that hole. And even that, just we hadn't had that many attacks, but you could see they were thinking, is Dupree going to fire it out wide like he did in that first phase of the game, or like he did for Reed last week? And it's just the disguise on it is really clever. So you could see that having that those two sort of tens as pivots at 10 and 13 on the pitch really made it difficult to defend. And I think that is where that's ultimately where our bonus point came from, that alongside with kind of the forward dominance. So a lot of very good performances in that. Probably a mention as well for Will Griff-John, who came on and kind of having not played that much this season, propped up the scrum for well over 60 minutes. Few penalties went against him. Few went for him. I was trying to tell, but I can never tell with scrums. So I think he held that up well. And Cobus Beattie had a really good game as well from second row. I think he went down injured at one point and I thought we need him not on the field because he is just a beast. So again, he's another one we'll miss when he goes, along with Manu. That's without getting to name the whole team. I think there were some very big performances there, and certainly the kind of people you want to step up at this stage of the season. Your Ben Currys, your Luke Cowan-Dickies, your experienced internationals in George Ford and Manu. That's what we need, and I think we really saw that in that game. It was kind of, the rest of our players did well and did the jobs really well, but it was the internationals who just stepped up, for that end of season, we need to win this game, so everything's going to go right. And I thought that was very impressive. And bodes really well for kind of our attack going into the end of the season as well. Obviously, we had Rafi at nine rather than Gus for most of the game, which brings a bit more speed and seems to be working well. So very encouraging in that regard. And I think that back line that started the Newcastle game is probably edging towards our starting back line for the rest of the season. If we want to score tries, you know, if we want to manage a game and we're in a semi-final away from home at wherever, you know, Exeter or Saracens, somewhere where it's going to be tough, then maybe it's a different question. But, you know, if we want to play fast rugby, then having Rafi at nine and Ford and Dupria, just with that pace that we've got on the wings and the power that we've got in the centres, I think is a really good combination. So, yeah, I'm going to name the whole team there, but some really genuinely good sort of putting the hand up performances from a lot of people.
And just a quick note on George Ford as well. I've been tracking this quite closely this season, but 5 for 5 from the tee, converted all 5 tries.
In horrendous weather as well. Bear in mind, We scored, I think, 3 at the end where the wind was blowing against him. Literally one of, like, every kick you could see was getting, the wind was trying to blow it back over the post. So they were not easy kicks at all, just to add to that.
Yeah, and, you know, uncharacteristically for George Ford, who's been a pretty consistent goal kicker all his career, he's had a terrible season from the tee thus far. But again, just this prevailing sense that maybe some of these players are starting to round into form and maybe that extra bit of international class is starting to tell. I thought it's worth highlighting that this might be the first, I think it's probably the first time this season that he's kicked 100% from the tee. So I think that's worth mentioning, particularly hopefully as a marker of things to come. I guess, James, from your perspective, anything else to discuss on this Newcastle game? It does feel like one where there was a clear dividing class between the two teams, and that did ultimately pay out. But anything else you wanted to discuss off the back of
I think that's just, as I said last week, you know, we expected to win and win big, but, you know, I just thought if there were going to be the conditions for a Newcastle win this year against the Oz, then this was kind of it. You know, big crowd against Sale, the Steve Diamond connection, the being embarrassed from the week before, people playing for their jobs, people like Guy Pepper sort of saying goodbye to the club at a young age. You know, there must be some guilt there from people like him, you know, sort of been brought through the academy, given the chance. We're going to ship out all of these experienced players. We're going to give some youngsters a chance. We don't mind if we come bottom for a year. And then the 3 or 4 players that do shine in a very poor team are all going to leave bigger clubs, and, you know, we've been there and I feel that. So I think, you know, for us to come through is really important. It keeps the pressure on. And when you look at the fixtures for the next few games, I mean, the rest of the results didn't quite go our way, in the sense that, you know, if Bath and Northampton had won, they might have been clear in kind of home semi-final territory and brought third and fourth back, you know, back towards us a little bit. Bristol getting that victory against Leicester, it does knock Leicester out for us to now host them, which is, so, you know, you never know what the connotations are until you've played it out to the end of the season. But if Leicester had won, then obviously then we would have been higher up the table. We would have been ahead of Bristol there. So, you know, if you have a look at the rest of the fixtures, you've got Quins after their Champions Cup semi-final, 6-day turnaround, and they're going away to Exeter, who are now back in the top 4 race as well. So that's a do or die for Exeter. And actually, they'll be looking at it going, if we win here with 5 points, we move ahead of Quins. So Chiefs are proper back in the race here. And then you've got Saracens. If they want to net, they've maybe written off the opportunity for a home semi-final before the restart of the Premiership. They're now sitting in second and they're going to be facing Bristol. If they lose that at Bristol, then, you know, obviously Bristol move ahead of them there as well. And their Saracens' top 4 place is under threat. So I think Saracens are going to go all out to win at Ashton Gate. So much to play for in the next game.
It's a good point on Saracens. I'm looking at the table now, who have sort of emerged, not emerged is maybe the wrong word, who've sort of snuck up the table a little bit, you know, for so much of the season it was Northampton and Bath with the big stories, and actually two games out you look and oh, there are Saracens in place for a home semi-final. I think the thing that really pisses me off though is Saracens played 16, won 10, lost 6, 51 points in second place. Sale played 16, won 10, lost 6, 47 points in sixth. It just shows you how
valuable the Bath bonus points are. And you sorry to cut across you, but the Bath one's even more painful because they've won a game less. And they're still miles ahead.
Nine wins, seven losses, 50 points. So Bath have 14 bonus points this year. Sale have 7. And that's the difference. That's two wins. And you do feel like we've done everything we can over the last couple of weeks, obviously. We've just won 10 points across Quins and Newcastle. But letting Quins have those two losing bonus points, it might really come back to bite us and not pulling some of these teams away. All right, so... you don't want to start playing what if, but yeah, it is quite frustrating to look at the table and actually see there are only four teams who have won 10 games this season, and we are the only one who is outside of the top four at present. I guess whilst we're just chit-chatting about the table, though, Alex, you obviously weren't on the pod last week where me and James had a relatively long discussion about Newcastle and their plight. Just... I'm really going back to the well on this one with you being our man on the ground. But you know what's the vibe like in Newcastle at the moment? Because good crowd, 8,500 give or take, for a team that's not won once all season, and to be honest, has very rarely looked like winning a game this season. But what first of all, what's your thoughts on Newcastle and kind of what they've gone through this year? And secondly, you know, what was it actually like in the stadium on Sunday?
Yeah, it's a really good point on the table and how competitive the league is. There's only one team we've beaten both home and away this season, and that's Newcastle. Every other team, we've obviously not played Leicester and Saracens twice yet, but every other team we've won one, lost one, wherever that might be. So the league is very competitive with a big drop-off to that Newcastle team. As you said, really good attendance, 8,500. Last time they were at home against Leicester, over 7,000. So the attendances are there, and I think we've seen that for Sale as well. You know, back end of the season, we've had some really strong attendances. The interest in rugby is there. I think the feeling in the ground is just resignation and frustration, I think. And you get that from Falcons fans that you speak to, that they go, well, you know, we're just coming off an 80-point hammering. They sort of know they're not going to win. And there's just the immediate frustration from when the game gets going, when stuff starts to go wrong. And you can feel the kind of the pressure, you know, when, say, a ball gets dropped over the line, or, you know, a pass doesn't go to hand, or say, win a penalty or whatever. You can just feel the frustration from the crowd. But I think the sport for rugby is there. It's still a really good experience at Kingston Park. You know, it's a very well set up stadium for the size of crowd that they're going to get. You know, bear in mind that kind of crowds this season have been 5,000-6,000 every week from Newcastle. You know, to go 8,500 and cope with it really comfortably, like no issues. I know that the AJ Bell, as was, whenever we got a crowd of 10,000, it's just a nightmare. You can't get in the ground. There's queues at every bar. It just wasn't like that. So I feel like the club is set up to do well, and as James said, you know, they put their faith in youth. But ultimately, I think the other thing Falcons fans realise is it's better to have a very young Falcons team scrapping at the bottom end of the Prem, maybe not winning any games, maybe going down to the Championship, than to not have a club at all. And when you look at Worcester and Irish, that is the alternative. And that is where Newcastle are, you know, they are... And it sort of puts into stark contrast how lucky we are to have Simon Orange and Jed Mason, because without them, we'd be in exactly the same place and probably worse. You know, it really is. Newcastle are doing everything they can, I think. You know, there's no magic solution here. You know, you can try your hardest, but ultimately they've got the lowest playing budget because they're dealing with the crowds we're getting, but without a backer. So I think we should be very appreciative of our owners and very sympathetic to what Newcastle are doing. But, you know, if they continue to get 7,000-8,000 crowds in, which is definitely doable with a 10-team league, then that will start to turn around. And they've always had a great academy, massive catchment area, really strong rugby area in the northeast. So there are going to be people coming through. It's about doing what Sale have done and turning the corner and kind of keeping hold of them. And we know better than anyone that you can have a really good academy, but if you let them all go to Wasps or whoever else wants to buy them at the time, then it's very hard to create a competitive team. But just on that that attendance point as well, I was looking at this because I don't know whether you remember, there was a City AM article early in the season about how Premiership was on its knees and average attendances were down by over 1,000 per game and it's going to cost the game millions. And actually, what you're seeing now that the season's played out and you know, we've not got those sort of fluctuations of Christmas games and things like that, is that pretty much everyone's attendances are up on average. And Newcastle particularly averaged so far this season 6,000, up from 5,500 last season. So Sale, the same, we're over 7,000 average from 6,400 last season, that's in the Prem. And just, you know, the interest is clearly there. There's clearly a good fan base who want to support it. The experience is really good at Newcastle, genuinely one of the best away experiences I've had. Obviously, it helped that we won, but I wasn't going there, you know, wanting to win. So that didn't make the biggest difference. You know, pub near the ground, you can go and have a bit of food, have a drink, get into the ground, really good service, really friendly people. So, yeah, this is going off into a bit of a wider point, but if you can keep those people coming back and they've got the home game against Bath, which is their last home game of the season in the next round, got a load of, they did it for the Leicester game, but a load of flags being put in the West Stand from the people who did the flags at Newcastle United, stuff like that. I think you can see from both Sale and Falcons, there's a real effort to make it a really good experience for supporters and actually get people coming back, and it is working. It's just a slow process. You're not going to all of a sudden get 10,000 a week. So I suppose it's a bit of a keep the faith with both Sale and Newcastle, but especially with Newcastle. And as I say, you're better off being in top of the Championship than you are, you know, being in Worcester's position, with a massive sympathy to all the Worcester fans out there. Yeah, does that sum it up well? Frustrating, but yeah, you take having a club over, you know, giving away a few penalties, wouldn't you?
I think that's the way that I think subconsciously I've been thinking about it, but you've articulated it so well there, which is you'd rather have a Newcastle in this situation than have a Worcester who don't exist anymore, or an Irish, or a Wasps. And, you know, we said on the pod last week, we support what Newcastle are doing. They've decided they can't live on the means anymore, and they've cut their cloth accordingly. Is that what you'd like to see? No. Can you understand the decision? Yes. Particularly when the alternative is going the way of Jersey Reds, you know, for example. It'd be interesting to see just kind of what happens over the summer. You feel like this is it's a blight on the league, as we said last week, and surely you can't have it happen for a second year in a row, but we will see. And whilst we're in the wait and see business, one other bit of news for this week that we wanted to chat about, given that there's no game in the Premiership this weekend for Sale, given it's the European Cup semi-finals, is some rumours going around and potentially confirmed by Alex Sanderson in post-game after Newcastle, that Sam James is potentially leaving the club at the end of the season. And James, I know Sam James is a player who's always been, you know, quite close to your heart. We've obviously sort of touched upon this a little bit previously. We've obviously been speculating on it, you know, publicly. But should the rumours prove true and Sam James leaves the club, what's your initial thoughts? What was your initial reaction, you know, when you've been hearing sort of all this through the rumour mill?
Well, I think he's done more than enough for Sale to warrant the opportunity to go and do something else. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I don't know how many games he's got, but it's definitely over 200. Maybe it's even, I don't know if it's at 300, but it's definitely over 200 games for Sale. He's been absolutely fantastic for us. Sorry, Gunners.
It's 241, according to
games. I think if you play 241 times for your club, you can go and do something different. And by the way, definitely the right decision for him. You know, the signal has been very clear from the coaching group that, you know, when even when he's been the best 13 in the squad, he still hasn't been getting picked. So, you know, when you kind of, you know, we talk about this at work, you know, sort of the signals that you send, you know, someone doesn't get promoted or get on a project that they want to work on. These are all sort of conscious decisions that you can make. And, you know, you eventually a message is received. And I think the message to Sam James is very valuable squad player, can fit in at 13 and 15. Let's not forget, he's played a lot of 10 for us in the past as well in the Diamond era. You know, he is gold dust from a squad player perspective. And people will probably pay him quite a lot of money to go somewhere else. And, you know, he wants to be first choice and he probably wants to be playing every week at 13, frankly. So I think, you know, look, push comes to shove. Rob Dupree is going to be getting picked at 13 when George Forbes is available. Tom Curtis, I think, getting extended in the way he did, it made me think, you know, if this is a young lad now, are we now basically saying, Rob Dupree, you are a 13 and Tom Curtis is going to be George Forbes' backup next year? I think that will probably come true. And, you know, I think it's a real shame. He's got an amazing skill set. He's one of the best under the high ball that I've ever seen in terms of catching the ball above his head. He can obviously kick off both feet. His left peg kicks into the bottom right-hand corner. We will definitely miss that. That's not something that's obviously something that we can replace in the squad. And having a kicker either side of set piece and of rucks and walls keeps oppositions guessing. He's also really good at the grubber kick through, the chips over the top. And, you know, you don't see that much from, you see a little bit from Rob Dupree, but not as much at 13. So, no, he's going to be a massive loss. We've been very fortunate to have him. He's been brilliant for us in tough times and in good. And we just wish him all the best if this is true. I don't know what it means for Luke James. You know, we haven't seen him for 2 years. You know, he started last season as first choice 15, got injured and never got back in after Christmas because Joe Carpenter came in. And I think, you know, Luke James, I think, was one of the youngest players in Premiership history, if not the youngest, to get to 100 games for his club. So, you know, he was well set as an absolute stalwart. He's the reason why people like Dan Kelly left and you know, and Cameron Redpath. You know, so if Sam leaving also precipitates Luke leaving, I would be pretty upset about that. I'd say for both of them, Sanderson hasn't quite got out their consistent best in a way that Dimes did. Now, Sam James has hit really good form this year. Don't get me wrong, he's had a really good season. But, you know, he was like, why isn't he getting picked for England under Diamond? And now he can't get into the sale first choice 15 under Sanderson and it hasn't been kind of man of the match performances since Sanderson arrived. So I'm not sure if there's what that is, whether it's a style of play or just the kind of backing. I've mentioned a couple of times, haven't I, with both Luke James and Sam James. They're kind of, you just got to back them. And if they play every week, they get stronger and stronger. And, you know, certainly on Sam James, he's been in and out and in and out. And I think that's quite difficult to get up a flow. So yeah, sad, but thankful.
241 appearances for Sale. 165 appearances at centre, 21 at fly half and 20 at fullback as well. Well, we're talking about the real old school days here. Him playing, starting at 10 against Toulon in the Champions Cup. Like so, a couple of appearances at 15 as well. A real sort of jack of all trades player. But I guess, Alex, maybe moving away from the Sale perspective, you look at a player like Sam James, obviously incredible skill set, a real sort of, I know, to use a baseball analogy, a real five-tool player in terms of you know, what he could do on the field. Obviously, lots of positional versatility. But from your perspective, you know, Never played for England, played for England A, never really got close to England. Obviously, you know, won a Premiership Rugby Cup with Sale, but never won a Premiership. I guess that I find Sam James a fascinating case study here as a loyal servant of the club and a player who we've all enjoyed watching for so long. But you do wonder at 29 now, he's probably getting towards the back few years of his career. Do you think it's fair to say that he's maybe never quite lived up to the potential that he showed when he first burst onto the scene in, you know, 2015, chipping and chasing over Stephen Marler for that try against Northampton?
Not won a premiership yet, mate. Plenty of time. Season's still live. Yeah, it's an interesting point, I think. I remember that chip and chase distinctly and thinking, this kid looks good. And I think you've got to remember that those first 5 years he was playing for Sale, as we said, he was basically the only player who could play 10 fit in the squad. Also basically the only player who could play 15 fit in the squad. So I think he's kind of been almost hamstrung by his loyalty to this club at times. You know, the fact that he's just played anywhere and everywhere for us, he would have been a brilliant 13. Probably suffered from England rugby's continuing refusal to look north of Leicester, which I think has softened a little bit with Steve Borthwick, but has always been an issue. You know, when he was on form, if he had been at Quinn's or Saracens or Bath, I don't doubt he would have. I mean, you've only got to look at Bath. They have one decent season and their entire team gets back in the England setup. Like, it's not hard to see. You know, it's, it doesn't help or hinder them that they're near Pennyhill Park as well. But, you know, I think the further away you are from that sphere of influence, the harder it is. So I don't think there's too much blame you can lay it at Sam James's door. I think you can criticise maybe the system. You can understand that if he was coming through somewhere else, it might have been different. But I think he could have... There was times when he should have been playing for England, and that isn't necessarily because he wasn't good enough. That was other stuff going on. And you had people like Will Greenwood saying he should be playing for England, people like Austin Healey. He's such a talented footballer, and it does tend to happen with this kind of player in England as well, you know. Same with Welsh. There's you know, there's probably more chance, not even because of squad depth, just because of the way he plays. He's so clever, such intelligence on the ball that we've seen those moments of magic, but also that consistency throughout. And I think maybe it just wasn't seen by other people. As you say, you know, very long career at Sale. No one ever wins anything at Sale, unfortunately. You know, we haven't got that much under our belts. So if you're going to stay at Sharks, you know, you're not going to be awash with trophies if you've been there the last 10 years. But I think what he's done for the club will be remembered for a long, long time. And people will be saying, oh, do you remember that Sam James moment, this Sam James moment? So, you know, there's a different legacy to have there, isn't there? I don't think it's a disappointment or kind of below what you would expect. I think it would be great to round off his career at Sale with a premiership win this season. I'm not confident that'll happen based on form, but you know, I think there's been certainly as some for a fan who's gone to a lot of their own games and watched those moments that maybe don't make the highlight reel, there's a lot of memories there of very, very impressive bits of play. And also his ability not to get yellow carded when deliberately knocking on when every other Sale player was getting yellow carded was one of my highlights. Don't really remember that back in the day, but yeah, put his hand out, deliberately knocked it on. We'd had about 3 yellow cards in the last 2 weeks for that yellow card, and he just looked at Sam James and went, no, you're too good and too nice, and we're not going to send you off. So I think he always was respected by opponents and referees as well as his fans, which is probably, you know, massive testament to him as a player.
One more question. This is for the both of you on this. I don't think anything has been confirmed or even rumoured that heavily in terms of where Sam James could potentially be going. Did a quick check, looked on Rugby Pass. There was a report from Neil Fistler a couple of months ago, actually, maybe, that says there's maybe two options. A move to Pro D in France or a move to a URC team. Potentially one of the Italian ones. And I guess, James, we'll come back to you first. If you're Sam James, 29, 241 appearances for Sale, really good at chip and chases, etc. Where would you be, if you were in his shoes, where would you be going next? What's the next move for Sam James?
Well, I mean, everyone seems to be going to the Pro Dirt, Courtney, everyone else. It's a great league. But I know he's been linked heavily with Benetton in the past. And if he wants to be sort of chasing trophies, then maybe Benetton isn't a bad place to be. Benetton are consistently in the mix in the URC now for the last 2 or 3 years. Not quite bursting through just yet. But, you know, going to experience a new culture, I think that might be the thing in his mind here, you know. But either of them would be fantastic for him. I don't know how good his French or his Italian is, but maybe he's been working on it this year in his spare time. And obviously, just as a final shout-out, you know, I think if he's going to a warmer climate, then those shorts can get shorter and those long legs of his can really take, really impress those French and Italian ladies over there. So, I think everything that Alex said was absolutely spot on for me. One of my favourite moments was that Denny Solomona try against, I can't remember who it was against, either Saracens or Bath. At home, and it was with Faf de Klerk with the switch pass, and Sam James came in from the sort of onto the blind side. That's what you talk about, rugby intelligence. He's kind of read the field of play, he's made the call to Faf. Faf switched the pass to him, and he's flicked it on the inside to Denny Solomona, who goes through and then sidesteps the fullback, scores an absolutely great try. And that's just where you're like, oh, yeah. When you got centre who can take ownership as first receiver, that's when rugby starts getting a bit sexy. We'll miss those moments.
And that's the pod for this week. Obviously, it's a shame to end it on a slightly sour note, talking about potential leavers. But you know, such is life in the sales sphere. James, Alex, thanks again for joining me. Thank you to everyone who's been listening. And I guess I'll throw it over to you guys for one final moment. If there's anything else that you guys would like to chat or round the pod,
I just want to give a shout out to Lim Rugby Club, who've stayed up this year. Everyone would have had them as a distant last, and actually they've ended up in a pretty safe space in a really, really difficult league, a league which, you know, pays for players. Lim doesn't do that, and you know, really continues the lesson on bonus points. Because Lim have basically decided to have on their 4G pitch to throw the ball around, and even if they lose, to get over the line with 4 tries. And if you do that, you might get a losing bonus point as well. So plenty of bonus points for Lim this year, and some high scoring games, entertaining the fans, bringing them in from the village. So well done, Lim.
Yeah, absolutely. I echo what James said. Good bit of Northwest rugby news. Got Sale FC and Sedgley Park staying up in Nat 1. Obviously, Sale FC staying up by the skin of the teeth, but Sedgley came up from Nat 2 last season. So, very good for both of them. They'll be playing each other again in the Manchester Derby in Nat 1. And yeah, we've obviously got Farblin and Preston in Nat 2. So, really strong. Coldy fighting away in the Championship as well. So very good representation, but yeah, Lim's unbelievable story. I think to stay up in that league, it's such a massive jump. So hopefully next season is just as exciting. Get yourself down next season if you can. And obviously with kind of Nat 1, Nat 2 wrapped up, it's all a focus on Sale Sharks again, really. So home game against Leicester on Friday night, 10th of May. We do very well against Leicester. I'm informed that we're their bogey team by friends who are fans, so get ourselves down, pack it out. Should be a great atmosphere, and hopefully a bonus point win to send us into the end of the season with maybe just a chance of making top 4.